You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 72 of the Caribbean Cricket Podcast. I'm your co-host, Mashal St. Patrick Hewitt, and you know who's with me.
Yes, Antoki here. Mash, we spent a good few hours and episodes over the years looking at why Guyana Amazon Warriors have failed to win the Caribbean Premier League. And you know what? We've got one of the architects, one of the reasons why Guyana have never won the CPL. We've got someone who's had the golden touch with CPL franchises, been involved in the coaching setup for teams that have reached the final for five times, two of those times winning, including with your beloved Jamaica Talawas, and all of those times they've knocked Guyana out in the knockouts. So, but other than that, Mash, I think it's important because we've got a coach on who, you know, has achieved so much in the game with teams, but his name's not spoken about as much as it should be in our opinions, Mash. So who have we got on the show today?
Yeah, 100%. I think in a year where there's been so much talk about white ball this, white ball that, and what tends to happen, Santolki, is every time a name comes up in West Indies cricket about this person should get involved with West Indies cricket, it's always a legend. It's always a legend's name. People will just throw out a Brian Lara. No one will ever ask what coaching credentials he's got. They'll just throw out a legend's name. From the minute you've got a name in West Indies cricket, people are throwing out your name, irrespective of if that's the right call or not. And a couple of days ago, I just simply put out a tweet. I just said, how comes in West Indies, no one's ever really talking about Donovan Miller's name? People who know. But when it comes to the big, big talk, no one ain't calling Donovan's name. So I've kind of given it away, people. If you're watching on the visuals, you can already tell. If you're listening on the audios, the guest we've got today, as Santolki correctly pointed out, multiple franchise-winning coach. We didn't even talk about the wins with Vancouver Knights in the Global T20 in Canada or the Jersey Stars in South Africa, much less the work with English counties, the England team as well. We have Donovan Miller with us today. Mr. Miller, how you doing?
I'm very fine, thanks. And thanks for all the kind words. And most importantly, thanks for having me on your show. It's something I always want to do for a long time. But I didn't get the opportunity, but now I'm glad I'm finally here to have a chat with you guys.
Definitely. We're glad to have you on, Donovan. So let's get started, I guess, for our viewers, our audience. I guess let's ask the question we ask all our guests. Who is Donovan Miller? Now, obviously, you grew up in Jamaica and moved to the UK as a teenager. Kind of, if you could kind of summarize your journey into getting into cricket and then more specifically coaching.
Cricket is the only thing I ever done since I was a kid, and the only job I ever do is the only thing I ever know. I was born and raised in Jamaica, played for Melbourne Cricket Club, and obviously was at Melbourne Cricket Club for a while. Back in those days, I don't know if it's the same, There wasn't a lot of, I would say, opportunities. So I'm this young kid who always dream really, really big and think ahead. So I decided that I'm going to move to the UK and live with my granddad, who was living in West London near Lord's Cricket Club. Yeah, so and I moved to England and from there, just been playing club cricket. I remember the first time when I arrived in the UK, I asked my granddad to take me to Lord's, and I turned up at Lord's, and I think there was Angus Fraser and someone else, and I said to them, I want to play county cricket. And they kind of explained to me the protocol and how it works and the stuff what I have to go through to get there, and it'd take me 7 to 8 years to qualify. And they pointed me out to like one of the best clubs in Middlesex, and that's where the journey starts, really.
With the when you say the which club actually we should say which club in
it's Ealing Cricket Club. That's the first club I played cricket for in England. At that time, you know, I was, you know, very passionate about the game, you know, really excited about it. And I was an overseas player that year. So I played in the club second team for the warm-up games. And then I think I did so well that they have an overseas professional South Africa, and they swapped the spaces with him. So he plays in the twos and I go play in the first team that year. I did okay, I think, in terms, yeah. And from there on, I was always looking to find more people from, you know, my heritage. I would say more from the Afro-Caribbean community. So I met a few guys playing. Frank Griffiths, he just retired playing first class cricket at that point, and Tony Joseph, who was a part of academy setups, and they take me to another club in North London, which was Winchmore Hill Cricket Club, and I played a lot of club cricket there, and that's where I didn't have anything. What I can say as a kid, you know, I'm always good at leading and stuff like that. And Tony Joseph asked if I want to do a coaching course, and I was like, what's wrong with this guy? I'm like 19, 20. Why am I going to be a coach? So that's how it's all started. And I did take up the offer, and I've done a level two. I remember when I done a level two, that was like, whoa, early 2000s. I think it was like 2001, 2003, around that period. I do a level two service ticket, and then I started doing some stuff at the cricket club and some other stuff in the community, which I've been paid to do, and some voluntary stuff. And I really kind of get fall in love with it, because the response I get from like people who were my age that time, it kind of spurred me, and I said, wow, I could do this. And yeah, and that's how I started coaching.
When this is it's already fascinating. Two things I want to ask you to break down here. When you were playing club cricket in the UK, and obviously I think you were playing some seconds as well for some of the county sides.
Yeah.
Were you going back to Jamaica in the summer and playing cricket as well? So was it always your focus was I'm going to play? Like, was there ever like a dream of yours to be like, right, let me go back and try get into like Jamaica trials and try see if I can make the national team, this, that, and the other?
Yeah.
Did it ever go that far?
So before I left, there was a story which I haven't shared much. So before I left Jamaica, there was, you know, talks of me getting in the under 19 team, and then we were playing a club game at my club, Melbourne Cricket Club, and I have this story. I think it was Marlon Samuels was batting that time, and I took a catch, I think it was long on, and it split my webbing. And I have to end up in the hospital to get some stitches, and when the captain take me to speak to the president of the club about my finger, he says players play at their own risk, and then I remember that game stopped because everyone says no, we're not playing anymore. It was a game, and the captain take me to the hospital, get my hand stitches up, and I think that kind of pushed me away a little bit, because we were all thinking that you know, if we get hurt, you know what's gonna happen here. And then my mind was just slowly focus on England, and you turn up to England, and you play club cricket, and it's not professional, You know, and every Saturday, someone will give you a brown envelope with some money at the back, you know, even though they're not allowed to pay you or something like that. So you never used to get that in the Caribbean. So that, the, you know, and stuff like that was really, you know, very, very good to me. So I just decided that, yeah, I never have my mindset back at going back to the Caribbean. It was, you know, it was something that was really hard to kind of, you know, to do.
Mm. So then that takes me to the second question then. When you start collecting your coaching, and I guess this is a bit of a weird question because I'm going to ask you to kind of look back to look forward to the present, right? You start collecting your coaching certificates, your level two, your level three, etc., etc. Now, the reason I'm asking you about this is Cricket West Indies have recently rolled out, the pandemic notwithstanding, rolled out like a coach education program to try and upskill the coaches back home, yeah?
Yeah.
This would suggest that you were a lot, how do I phrase this? You would have been well ahead of the pack. Do you get what I'm saying?
You got your badges a long time. I've done my level three in 2007.
Right, exactly.
So, yes, I've done my level three 2007. Yeah, it's a long time ago. And before I could, it's changed now a little bit in England in terms of qualification, but before you can go onto your level four, you would have to have a loads of experience in my time in like coaching at the elite level and coaching international players before you can apply to get on the level four. And I applied in 2014-15 when I was with Essex. When Chris Silva just took over as head coach and he asked me to kind of support him with the pros. You know, me and him both were looking after the academy at Essex and he asked me to help him with the pros. And I applied and I get a slot. And I mean, it took me, how long did my level three take? Maybe 3 years. At that time, it was basically a degree, basically a master. So I've done a master's, my level four, and that's linked. I've done that at Loughborough University. It took us 3.5 years to do that. So I finished that in 2017, my level four, yeah.
So then let me ask you something, Donovan. Yeah. When was the first time, and if the answer's never, when was the first time, and you don't have to give us details or anything like that, that somebody realistically approached you back home and said, Donovan, come, there's opportunities with the West Indies cricket team? Because I refuse to believe, given your level of qualification, that someone has never approached you to have that conversation. You might not want to give us details here, but surely this conversation must have taken place because you're going to be up there in terms of...
Look, that's a really good question. What I can say, I wouldn't say anyone has approached me, but I have, in the past, I've reached out and have some good conversations with people who are in charge, but obviously hasn't been any opportunity. So, but I've reached out on a few occasions to offer my help with, so nothing happens there. But I understand, you know, how the system works. You know, there's a lot of competition for places in coaching, and there's people maybe who's been, you know, been groomed and been developing and been doing the work before me. So I don't expect anything to be handed, but yeah, West Indies cricket, which, you know, is a part of my life, and is, you know, before you either coach or play anywhere, your first passion is always going to be West Indies, and that's where you grow up and watching, and you've earned watching the Malcolm Marshalls and, you know what I mean, and these guys playing. So it's something is always close to your heart. And I've, you know, so yeah, have some conversations. It's good conversations, and I wouldn't say anyone has reached out to me though.
Santoki, I'm gonna hand to you, but notice that Donovan just gave us the answer he has to give, which is if West Indies come call it,
you know,
he's really ready to rise to the call. But Santoki, come in.
So you were at Essex for a while, as you mentioned, kind of, and then you joined the coaching setup at the Talawas for CPL 2016. How did that opportunity sort of arise?
That opportunity. I think it was Chris who was captain, and Chris have spoken to the owners and said they have a guy who's really well qualified, and he just left it, said, you know, you could interview him, and they were the owners were in London and they interviewed me, and that's how it all started. They wasn't going to go off recommendation, as they said, you know, even though, you know, I would say the captain of Inferential, they said, you know, they need to do an interview. So they come to London, they interview me, they ask me some really good questions, and I think I done well in the interview. And they offer me the position as the assistant slash bowling coach in 2016. And at that time, I was part time with Essex, and I remember having the conversation, and they said it's a great opportunity for me to go away and to grow and to learn. I should go and do it, and then yeah, the rest was history.
And sort of what was it like then, as like working at a major franchise tournament, coming into it as like a new coach?
But the thing is, because at that time I was doing so much, like at Essex, I was doing like all three formats. We were doing the red ball and the 50 over and the T20 stuff, and looking after the second 11, the academy, everything. So it was so much so coming into the franchise at that time, and because of my work ethic and how I work and operate, I find it, really, I wouldn't say easy, but really rewarding. I find my style fits in well with the coaches. And I remember watching the owners were watching us running a training session, and you know, they were so impressed that they have a meeting and discuss some bonuses, which was quite rewarding at that time. So yeah. But as I said to you, I've been doing, you know, lots of stuff with the county at that time. So, and I've been used to working with international players. And one of the questions I've been asked in the interview was, I quite remember, is how would you deal with someone like Dale Steyn? Because I think Dale Steyn was one of our overseas in 2016 CPL. And that's the question. I think I answered that one very well, and they were very impressed with the answer. Maybe that gets
hold on, hold on, I don't know. What was the answer, though?
I just said, look,
you're talking about a guy here who is, the best in the world. You know, what can I say to him? All I have to do is just make sure I manage him, make sure he gets everything he needs, and have conversations, and that's what it is, isn't it? Just make sure he gets everything he needs, make sure I manage him, and just have some conversations, and that's how I operate, you know.
Did you ever find it challenging? Because obviously at Essex you'd have a longer period to work with the team. In franchise cricket, you've got guys coming in, short time frame to work with them before the tournament starts. As a coach, how did you sort of adapt to that environment?
As a coach, I think what have helped me as a coach to kind of adapt and to be a bit more flexible, you know, I've coached all ability, you know, from visual impaired to, to special needs, right up. I try and get experience in everything when I was on my journey. A lot of park cricket, tape ball stuff where you have only a little space to work in with 30, 40 people. Some people who never pick up a bat before. So those skills I've learned many years ago in my journey has kind of helped me to deal with different culture, different environment, different people. So when you come across someone who is so upskilled, like in the top of the game, you know that it's all about man management, you know. And the key thing is trying to know those people, trying to know what makes them tick, what does they like doing, what time does they wake up in the day, what time does they sleep, what time they like to train, what does they like to eat, what they drink. Those are really important things to have. To know about them. Once you know those people, then your life becomes a bit easier because you can plan ahead on how to deal with them.
When, so as Santoki said, part of 2016 winning with the Talawars, last year with the Patriots, I mentioned Vancouver Knights, etc., Jersey Stars, just to name a few teams, right? But focusing, using all of those four, but with a focus on the CPL, what would you say are the top two, top three things that lead to a successful white ball or T20, let's call it T20. What leads to a successful T20 franchise based on all the experiences you've had? What are the things that you've noticed are always there when a franchise reaches the final or wins the tournament? What are the key ingredients to success?
Well, look, you have to... Firstly, as I said, you know, you have to look to create a happy environment. Yeah. So that's the first thing. You look to create a happier environment where everyone is free. Everyone is allowed to make mistakes. you're backing people, and you it's all about honesty and how you communicate. So once you're honest, you communicate with everyone well, and you all of you buy into something, then I think you could create that. And what does help, I think, in any environment, you know, you need a few players in that are hungry. And this could be a really experienced player, and this could be a young player. You just need to find a way to get them hungry again, and to keep them happy, and then you'll be all right. And it's for us, it's all about the players. It's all about the players. You know, no matter what issue that these players have, no matter how they're hard to deal with, it's your job as a coach to find a way to deal with them, because that's who they are. That's what makes them good. So you have to find that way to deal with them and to manage it. So yes, you could say a lot of psychology involved anymore, and there's no special way to treat anyone, but you have to find a way to treat everyone different and get everyone together at the same time. So that's the challenge. It's a skill, I'm not going to lie, and it's not easy, but you know, the guys who are successful, that's what they do well.
In terms of technical skills, so, and you kind of mentioned Dale Steyn earlier on, so where do you draw the line between being hands-on and hands-off? So a Dale Steyn, you may not be saying too much to in terms of his overall game.
Mm-hmm.
But say now, so you've got St. Kitts this year. I'm trying to think of someone. You've got Jaden Carmichael, right? So Jaden Carmichael or Justin. Jaden Carmichael was just in the 60. And to be honest, Donovan, I thought he handled himself really well.
And it's an unbelievable kid.
But he's a young boy trying to work out his game and grow in the game. Now, someone like a Jaden Carmichael, you might have to be a bit more hands-on with, but how do you draw the line between too little input, too much input? What do you get what I'm trying to say here?
So, look, firstly, you know, again, you know, someone like him, you look at his strengths, okay? So at the moment, his strength is, you know, he can bowl good area. He doesn't spin the ball as much. So obviously, we would love him to spin the ball a bit more. But in a short tournament like this, you don't want to focus too much on that. So you concentrate a lot on his strength, what he does well, okay? And then you might work out some, instead of go technical, you might work out some tactical stuff. Maybe get him bowl a little bit straighter, not too full. Don't flight the ball. Can he bowl a yorker to close his over out? Can he go around the wicket? And you know, and how does he bowl an arm ball? You know, where does he land it? These little tactical stuff, and just help him to educate himself that way and give him confidence. Okay, and speaking about him, he plays in one of the games and he get hit for 4 sixes, and then the follow up game, you know, he took 2 for 6. So it just show you, as you talk about, you know, the character of that young people, and you could find those type of people very, very easy. You can see that, yes, there's something about him. And once we give him confidence and stuff like that, I think he will be a good little cricketer. However, going back to your original question, in terms of technical stuff, again, you might spot one or a few things that he needs to improve if he's not playing. And yes, you could touch on it and work on it for a little bit, but it's very, very, you have to be really careful that the player understand what he's doing. There's clarity around it before you impose those things on him. It has to be understanding. Or you leave it and you take some notes and you suggest some stuff that he could work on in his off season and what he should work on, and just try and help him and educate him that way. But going back to him, is really a confident kid and he's a fast learner. I think he's going to be really good for regional cricket, and then and hopefully, I think he's not far off of being a West Indies full cricketer in the future.
And also let's talk about the 60, actually, because obviously the Patriots have built on winning the CPL last year. You won the 60 earlier this week. As a coach, this is obviously a new format, a shorter format. From a tactical and psychological point of view, what are the are there much differences between T20 cricket and what you saw in the 60 in terms of, obviously, bowlers are going to get hit for more? How do you psychologically prepare them for that?
It's a tricky one. It's psychologically a tricky one because, you know, you could be going well and all of a sudden you lose three wickets and you're thinking, wow, we only have two batters left here. We're going to have to reassess. So those are the things that... is some of the tricky things. But Yeah, so you just like in that format, you know, we simple play away where we say, all right, you know, we're gonna bowl our best bowlers first and try and get wickets. So even if someone hit two sixes and we get a wicket, we'll take that. We'll look at the par score in T10, even though it's two different formats, and say we're happy to get, you know, if we're happy to get hit for 1-6 every over, and if we can get a wicket, you know, if we can get 6 wickets, you know, we're not going to be defending more than 90 to 100. Obviously, it doesn't work like that. People's going to play very well and they're going to get more than that. But we also have confidence installed in this group, you know, that, you know, just go out there and do it. Play your way. Hit the ball if that's what you do. If you get out, it's okay. It's fine. And that's the kind of type of confidence we kind of look to install in these guys. And that's how we want to play our cricket, you know, and that's how they play. And the thing is, we never believe that we lost the game. No matter what position we are in, we strongly believe. And I'm not just saying, like, the guys who are out in the middle, every single one of the support staff, every one of us on the bench, believe that if we need 13 or over to win the game, we can get it. And I think that's, and that shows, you know, leading back from last year's CPL final when Dominic Drakes won it for us. We almost chased down 160 against TKR in one of the round games. We were coming out, we were 40 for 3. You know, we see young, you know, Dual Bevis from coming and just hit 4 sixes in a row. So yeah, and then the next 2 games he followed up, he didn't score any runs. No pressure. If that's where you want to go again, next game, go and do it. So it's that type of trust and understanding we have with these guys, and that's how we want them to play, and we back them.
So thank you for that, by the way, Donovan. That's a really good answer. But just before, because we know you've got things to get onto today, because obviously CPL does actually begin tomorrow. Just a final thing from me before we bring it to a close. And this is a bit of a difficult question, because obviously, you spend the majority of your time in the UK. Obviously, you're over here you're over in St. Kitts at the moment for the start of CPL. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of conversation in the Caribbean and the diaspora with regards to West Indies white ball woes. But let me be careful with this, how I phrase this question. I'm not necessarily talking about just the West Indies team, mm-hmm. and that's the end of the conversation. I mean, regionally, how West Indian players are adapting to the changing nature of white mm-hmm. ball cricket. So like ODI cricket, teams are regularly scoring over 300. Mm-hmm. 300, or getting close to 330, 350, where if we're lucky, getting to 300 if we bat the 50 overs.
Yeah.
In T20s, we've lost a series of great players in the game. Gale, Bravo, Pollard, Narayan Russell, question marks, etc. But a lot of the established players have now moved on past West Indies, and we're trying to create a new generation of T20 white ball cricketers. I guess from an outsider's perspective, and then I'm asking you here, from an outsider's mm-hmm. perspective looking in, if it's possible, where do you feel we could make beneficial changes for these players? I don't know if I've even worded that question well, but I'm just intrigued that what you see as a coach with an outside. So Santokhi and I see it as podcast hosts, and we see how the team is developing. But as a coach looking in, and when you're catching West Indies games and you're seeing the development arc of some of these players, what do you look at as a coach and go, boy, we could do with doing X, or we could do with doing Y? Or do you just think we've got to just keep backing the players and eventually it comes, like, I mean, just intrigued to see where you stand.
Yeah, look, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because, you know, look, it's really a good question and a tricky one. But if you give me a piece of blank paper and says, write down what you see without being critical, it's well documented that, you know, rotating off strike is been a problem for a very long time in you know, a cricket here in the Caribbean. How do we get that better? I've seen the current coaches, and I've seen some stuff that, you know, they've done a lot of work in doing that. I'm not quite sure if players are going away and working on their own game either. I don't know. I'm just, those are some of the questions I would ask. And, you know, I've seen a couple of guys who have developed the game on the offside, you know, Raymond Rifa. Raymond Rifa is one of them who, you know, who's used to be leg side dominant. Now he hits the ball lovely on the offside, you know. I've seen some young players now starting to reverse sweep and stuff like that. But I think if we could develop our game against spin because we have the power, I think, you know, I mean, I shouldn't say develop, I said continue to develop our way game against spin. I think that's, we could start seeing, you know, bigger scores in both formats in the 50 over and the T20 game.
Are there, I know you're with St. Kitts, obviously, but are there any players, we mentioned Jaden Carmichael earlier on, but are there any players within the region, look past the established ones, where you're saying, look out for that player, they could do something, they've got some serious talent there that you think might be untapped potential?
You know, there's a lot of youngsters coming through, isn't it? You know, Teddy Bishop, he looks a good little young player. You know, Moti, you know, I think he's going to be a good little spinner in the future. So there's a lot of young players coming through, you know, for West Indies cricket, which I think will be really, really good, you know. And there's a lot, and the 60 has exposed some of those guys, and you'll probably see a few more than during the CPL. I know Dominic Jakes has come on a long way since last year, you know, and he's playing all the way around the world now. He's becoming a skillful little all-rounder. He can hit the ball, and he bowls good change-up, and he's becoming really, really good at that. So, you know, it's not just the coaches at times, and I'm going to be honest with us here. You know, you could put in the system and you could have a lot of things happening and what you want. But I think players need to take some form, you know, they need to take something as well and go away and say, okay, how am I going to work? I am not good against leg spin. I don't rotate well. Is it a case that I need to get fitter? Is it a case that I need to go away, maybe invest in myself, maybe go to India, to Sri Lanka, maybe, you know, go to England and play some club cricket where the ball nip about if I'm not good against when the ball is swinging, whatever it takes, you know, and work on their game. I'm not saying they should not take away the power from them game, but okay, if I'm batting and it's a tricky period, how do I get through that gear? So a little stuff like that. And again, some of the guys who have done it, you know, Raymond Rifa is one of them, someone I rate highly. And I think that probably been underused in cricket for a very long time, and I was happy even though he was in my team, I was really pleased to see him doing well, you know, because he's a guy who has worked on his fitness and his game very, very hard. And if you go back all the way to Nick Pure, and remember he used to be very unsided, and he has gone away and he's worked on his game, and he has shot all over the ground now, you know, 360 player. So it's stuff like that. How do we do that? I don't know, because I never have those conversations with the people who are in charge. But yeah, I think that's something that needed to be addressed and get done. And the conversations need to start taking place with those players if they haven't been taken. Instead of giving them it to do, they need to take the onus and go away and work on their game. Because remember, they're professionals too, and that's their living.
Some very pertinent words there, Santo.
Yes, speaking of conversations, Donovan, you might need to speak to Evan Lewis and ask him when's he going to come back for the West Indies. I feel we've only touched the surface here, Mash. We're going to definitely have to get a part two to kind of deep dive into a lot of topics. But Mash, as we wrap up, it's only right you ask Donovan the big, big question, which we give to all our guests on the Caribbean Cricket Podcast.
Yes, of course. Good point, Santolki. So, Donovan, before we let you go, just three questions that we're going to ask you that you must answer. Every guest answers them when they come on the show. First things first, what is the best ground start with the Caribbean. What's the best ground to watch cricket at in the Caribbean?
Wow, that's a good one.
And you're not allowed to say Jamaica. You're not allowed to say Savannah.
Yeah, I can't be biased. it has to be Kensington Oval, Barbados.
How come? You have to say why.
It's just, there's a something about the ground. I don't know if it's the historic thing about it, but there's something about it. It's beautiful ground, and it's always buzzing. And probably where West Indies get the most support at the moment, I think. Could be wrong. But yeah, that's
That's fine. The best ground outside of the West Indies that you've either watched cricket at or played cricket at?
Lords.
Why? Just home of cricket?
No, it's just everything about Lords again. You know, the food, the lunch, the dressing room, the history, everything. You walk through the room, you know, it's just, you know, I mean, I spent a lot of time at the Oval, but, you know, I could have been biased there, but Lords is where every cricketer and who works want to go and want to coach and would love, even if the youngsters who's coming through, that's where they want to play.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, the best West Indian cricketer you've either played with or watched?
Very, very, very good question.
If you want to split it, you can. So if you want to give a batter and a bowler, that's fine, but ideally
can,
one.
Can I, well, I haven't played with, but the best one I've watched is, I'm going to go with a bowler, I think it's Malcolm Marshall. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. So if I was going to go, yeah, Malcolm Marshall, definitely.
And if you had to say a batter, who would you have gone for?
Well, Viv and Richards. Yeah, there was just something about Viv that, you know, you have to love. He has everything that you have to love as a West Indian cricket fan.
Well, you better hope Chris Gayle don't hear this, you know.
I was going to say Marlon.
No, I'm very honest. So Chris will take that as well. Yeah. Obviously, yeah.
Listen, Donovan, as Santoki said, we know that you only had a short period of time that you could spare with us today. You've just had practice with St. Kitts. Obviously, you've got more things going on with the team later today as well. But I just want to thank you for coming on the podcast and spending some time with us. We definitely have to do another deep dive on this, if you can spare some time, possibly when the tournament is over. We wish you well.
Thank you very much.
For CPL, but you need to understand that I want the Talawars to win. Santoki wants Amazon Warriors to win. So I don't know what you're planning to do, but just know that that's what we need to see happen.
It's going to be a good CPL. I think all the teams are evenly poised and some really good players here. And the team that execute their skills the best will probably go all the way. More consistent, execute their skills the best, more consistently, probably go all the way. And we hope to be that team. So, Len, you never know.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's been another episode of the Caribbean Cricket Podcast. As ever, do like, review, rate, share, subscribe, all of that jazz. But for now, that's thank you and good night.
Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.